This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
First of all, good afternoon. Welcome along to Manx Radio's Man in Line. It's just gone 12:05. It's Wednesday, the 29th of June. Alex sitting in once again for Andy Wind. Get well soon, Andy. Now, this afternoon, we're joined live in the studio by the Cabinet Minister, Kate Lord-Brennan. As I mentioned before, the Cabinet Office, a department that has a budget of around about £32 million. It's got a huge number of responsibilities that we're going to be talking about over the next hour. And also, as MHK for Peel and Glenn Faber, she topped the poll at the 2021 general election. So, how do you think she's getting on as your MHK or Minister for the Cabinet Office? We'd like to ring in with your questions, 66 13 68. Minister, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Alex.
Welcome to the programme. It's lovely to have you on.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, let's talk about the Cabinet Office role to start with. Mm-hmm. The Cabinet Office itself, what does it do? What's it for?
Well, Cabinet Office is really, you know, it's at the heart of government in terms of the central functions of government service delivery. You know, it's got everything in there from OHR, external relations, Crown and elections, planning policy, GTS is in there too, immigration. But I think, you know, as time has gone on and certainly like the intention with the Island Plan is that, you know, Cabinet Office really does have a role to play in picking up and those issues that are really cross-departmental, and my role as part of that has been in helping form the Island Plan and working with other departments to try and get focus on those issues that shouldn't fall just into one department.
And you mentioned there GTS, for people who don't go through all the government jargon, that's Government Technology Services?
That's right, yeah.
And a large proportion of your budget goes on that because, you know, it's the modern world, there's a huge amount of tech out there that the government would have to use. I presume that actually, from a financial point of view, is a huge part of the Cabinet Office budget.
Yes, and I think that there is, you know, that there's some further clarification on matters to the future of government technology services in a new digital strategy that will be coming to July, Tim Walt. So I think there's a recognition that actually there needs to be more understanding, more challenge, and you know, oversight over these areas too. So that will be coming forward for debate in July, Tim Walt.
Excellent. Well, we've got our first caller on the line. If you want to pop your headphones on, if you do want to speak to the minister this afternoon, please do give us a call. 66 13 68. Callum is on line one. Callum, you're live with the minister. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Hi, I'd just like to ask about the rise number in COVID around the islands, you get me? After TT, it's just been a number in rise, maybe not in any type of like survey or anything, but a number of flow tests around the island. I know people from north, south, east and west, you get me? And they've all got some people and all know someone who's got COVID, and it's a very high number after TT.
And yeah, and you feel this is due to the TT, do you, Callum? Yeah.
Yes, I do, because my mum is very ill, and there is a lot of people that I know on social media, everywhere, people's nans and stuff.
And in terms of a question for the minister, what do you want to see done about that? Do you feel that it's
well?
I
would want to know why we're still discussing TT for next year when we had this whole thing. We were like a number one place where there was no COVID. We were COVID free. And that not to say there was on a lockdown or anything, but this, we've let however many people on the island, you get me, for TT, and then the number of people are Manx residents have got COVID, and COVID's this big disease or whatever it is. And now there's loads of people who've got it after TT.
Okay.
And it's risking people's lives.
Okay, Callum. Well, Minister, obviously I know TT falls into Department for Enterprise, but of course public health falls into the Cabinet Office. What do you say to that?
Hello, Callum. You know, thank you for calling, and you know, I'm really sorry to hear about your mum. The rise in cases.
It's just not my mum. It's just island wide, really. Like yeah. I a number of people.
Yeah, and you know, the rise in cases. You know, it has been sort of, you know, published in the official information that goes out there, and I can assure you that, you know, public health and council ministers are keeping an eye on this. I think that, you know, we really have moved into a stage where I think that, you know, the society was perhaps, you know, reaching, you know, the limits in terms of being able to tolerate, you know, specific government intervention of the sorts that allowed the island to be COVID-free for a period of time. But given this endemic approach that we're moving to now, I think the emphasis has to be on, awareness and advice. And, I know that certainly towards the end of last week, the instruction was given to make sure that there's an increase of public messaging around COVID testing. And also Council Ministers has taken the decision to make sure that LFT tests are still going to be free. And that message about people taking care and the personal responsibility, I think is the key point on that. Whilst these things are being reviewed, I think that be cautious about any knee-jerk strong government interventions of the sorts we've seen in the past at the moment.
Callum, in terms of yourself and the way you live, do you take mitigations? Do you wear face masks? Do you LFT regularly?
No, I don't believe in any of it, really. I think it's a hoax, but people do get ill. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's mainly people, I know people that someone four times have brought it into someone's house and they're all jabbed up and whatever it is, boosted, and they've had it four times. And so, then the other two people that haven't had any jabs and they haven't even, like, they've had it like once.
So what would you like to see the government doing? If you had the hand on power, what would you expect the government to do?
Well, I don't know. I just don't know why we're still discussing TT if, like, we're worried about, like, or concerned about Manx residents, and we're letting 50,000 people. Not, I don't want to spoil anyone's fun with TT because obviously a lot of people love it, but, like, it's loads of people are getting ill after TT because there's loads of people bringing it over here, vaccinated or not.
So, in terms of the rest of the year, would you still be happy for the borders to be open for tourists to come here?
Well, yeah, because it's not too significant number into the thousands of 50s and tens of thousands just for 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your comments there, Callum. The Minister has heard them, and I wish all the best for your mum and your friends as well in getting well. Minister, in terms of public health, I mean, this brings us on to an area of your department that has been very much in the limelight before your time, but obviously continues to be. I was noticing on Twitter there's people been asking questions about advice when it comes to COVID infections and things like this. And your Council Minister colleague, Laurie Hooper, said, unfortunately, not my department. It sits with the Cabinet Office. I will flag this to them. I mean, doesn't Comin have a clear policy on COVID advice? You know, that if nine ministers don't know what each other are saying or doing, how can the rest of the island be expected to follow that line?
I think probably Minister Hooper was probably seeking to emphasise that distinction between DHSC and his ministerial role there, and the fact that public health just sits outside of DHSC.
But isn't that something that effectively, that's a bit like they have the Westminster bubble over there. It's great, the Tynwald bubble. For people like Callum or people in the general public, they don't care where it sits. Surely
Absolutely.
There should be a standard line that every member of Comin should be able to roll out.
Well, I can tell you that public health is there to provide advice at a popular health sort of population mm-hmm. health level, and certainly when it comes to making decisions around response to COVID, Council of Ministers as a collective hears that advice, takes that advice and has to consider it in the round, along with other factors that are really important to society. And it is the case that public health sits in the Cabinet Office. The reason for that is that through their healthcare reform proposals, it was recognised that should sit outside DHSC. And there is also the appointment now of a new interim director of public health who will be taking up that leadership role within that directorate, and that's where the advice will come from, and that's what helps to inform council's view if and when other decisions to do with COVID or indeed any other broader public health response is needed at a government level.
Well, you explained there, obviously, it was from the Sir Jonathan Michael review mm-hmm. and that it moved to Cabinet Office. Do you feel it works there? Because to the layman outside, we sit there and go, surely health sits in health, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
No, I think that was a key component, really. It was recommended that is the case for a reason, because there's a difference between healthcare provision and healthcare longer-term advice, and you're dealing with healthcare at a population level. I think that really, because the transfer of public health to effectively Cabinet Office as a sponsoring department took place right at that stage, really, at the point when everything was starting to happen with COVID in the early stages, So what we've not yet seen is public health being able to kind of get perhaps as much traction as it would have done to focus on other things. So that should be long-term population health, advice on that, and, you know, sort of research and data to inform all manner of things to do with keeping us healthy in the longer term, but also to inform health policy on that matter.
You mentioned there, obviously, a new interim director of public health has mm-hmm. been appointed. Is he based on the Isle of Man?
Well, I think that this is an interim position at the moment. I'm not sure what the specific arrangements are at the moment, but clearly it was, it's important to have the relevant experience there in public health, and that has been secured.
Yep. But is he based on the Isle of Man was my question.
I can't tell you about the individual arrangements there.
Okay. And what's the sort of time frame for getting a new permanent director of public health?
So these are staffing matters. So as right, a minister, okay. That's not something that comes into sort of, you know, a policy or political okay. area. I think, you know, it's just important that, you know, we have something in place there.
So obviously while the director of public health post has been vacant and awaiting the new interim one, who's been making the decisions and advising on our current COVID policy during this spike we've had since TT?
Well, the health reports, the reports that go out to do with COVID levels mm-hmm. are routine. You know, so they have been published. You know, I think the last one was only published, last week. So I think that the stage we're at now, you know, it's quite clear. You know, people can see the spike in cases. I don't think we're at a stage at the moment where we are making fast decisions, knee-jerk reactions to something which actually sort of might be expected. You know, as we've heard, you know, we've had all kinds of events. TT has happened. You know, there's all kinds of like respiratory infections going around at the moment. That's why the public health messaging is about, you know, sort of, you know, good hygiene and sort of responsible behavior. If you feel sick, you know, consider, you know, whether you should be going into work or who you're being around. And, you know, now, of course, that we've got the new appointment is in place. That's in place now. So, you know, anything that needs to be called upon can be called upon.
But in terms of advising Comin, you mentioned there, obviously, the Director of Public Health has been advising Comin. Has there been a vacuum then during this spike whilst we waited for the intermediate? Who's been advising Comin on policy so you can make decisions, informed decisions?
No, I don't think there has been a vacuum. You know, clearly the information is out there and published through the regular health surveillance reports, but effectively the policy on this at the moment has been set by government as being outlined in the endemic approach to COVID, you know, which recognises that every so often you will have an increase in cases, but is very much putting the emphasis on, you know, personal responsibility and awareness rather than significant strong government intervention in, you know, which has had to be legislated before in the past. It's pretty major stuff. So I think, you know, unless something like that is under, you know, consideration imminently, you know, I feel, you know, completely at ease with the fact of where we've been over the past week or so, and council will keep it under review and will be in a position to be, you know, well advised if we do need to take any decisions. But in the meantime, that that awareness that actually, you know, there is an increase in cases, consider how that is affecting you in terms of decisions. You can take the LFTs, they remain free. So that all still stands.
Okay, if you want to speak to the Minister, I'm sure we'll return to the topic of public health, bearing in mind COVID, at some point. 66 13 68. David Quirk's on the line. David, pull up your usual chair. You're on live with the Minister.
Yeah, it's a comfy one as well. Alex, and to Kate Lord Brennan there, we have $42 million in a fund. Does that actually exist? And before you answer, I'll just supplement that is, and the Minister for DEFA recently, twice now, has said everybody has got to get away from gas boilers, oil boilers, solar fuel, and probably electric. So what is the government, what is the policy from the Council of Ministers to support the community to put these green initiatives to work? Because I don't know if the Minister's got the power. Human rights say, if you put an application in and you put it for a new house and you want to put a boiler in of your choice, doesn't that affect her human or anybody's human rights to say what they can actually do to their own property?
Minister.
Hello, David. I'm happy to try and answer that. First of all, I'll say that, you know, there has been a lot of sort of back and forth on further development of climate change plans, you know, with a future one coming to, Tim Wills in July. And part of the reason for these consideration has been, because absolutely it needs to be understood what the impact is on the public, what the expectation is, and also, you know, where the realistically where the funding for this is going to come from. I think that the Claire Barber, the Minister for DEFA, had indicated that there would be an appropriate time soon to look at the date at which fossil fuel boilers are effectively disallowed for new developments. Now, currently in the Climate Change Act, there is a date in there for that. Off the top of my head, I think it's 2025, where they would be prohibited for new developments. Now, I think the point is that we know this is going to cost a lot of money. Where there are new developments, do you want a situation where over the long term, you're making it much more expensive for people to have to retrofit, go back and fit those where they're in new houses? I think in other places, your people have cited Scotland as an example to me. In new developments, they don't allow fossil fuel boilers. I need to sort of check this, but there's examples of other places where in new developments, they say, no, we're not going to have fossil fuel boilers. But actually then that makes developers put in, you know, other sorts of, you know, whether it's solar panels or air source heat pumps. So straight away then that becomes something that happens at a development level, a development control level. That, and then rather than the owners in the future having to retrofit that. So I think that's what she was talking about. And I think that's the sort of thing that, that Council and Tynwald will need to consider.
Maybe have a different view. What Miss or the Minister for DEFA said, she was quite dictatorial, as the way I looked at it, to saying, you will do that. And where's the discussion with, like you say, the public? Where's our input? Where's the input from the industry itself to say, we can actually do this? Or is the government saying, you're going to have to go electric? Which I think, in the future, we're going to go electric. When you get all the infrastructure ready, we'll probably go down the road of electric heating, electric water heating, all that sort of stuff. But we need a steer. And that's the thing I'm not getting from you. When you say July is going to be a decision, how much debate have we had in public? Not a lot. And I'll leave it at that.
No, I get your point, Dave. So this is the thing. So that actually needs to be more clarity over plans that are, you know, that council feel comfortable with in order to put them forward for that, exactly that, for that debate, that engagement, that transparency. I think that the climate change team in itself is undergoing a bit of a shake-up. That was set in place a couple of years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago. You know, I think now we need to get to, you know, specific things that the public and business can directly engage with, so we know what is coming and know what the expectation is, because so that different parts of the island can adjust to that, because it can't, as you've said, just be left with government, and it can't just be something which is sort of imposed and that's it. So I think with any future plans, that will provide I hope a lot more clarity over this.
Okay, David, thank you very much for your call this afternoon. You'll be glad to know that we're looking at having the DEFA minister on the Man in Line in a few weeks' time, so you can write some more questions up for her then.
Good.
Cheers. Thanks very much, David, there. David does make a point. I know, obviously, it doesn't completely sit in Cabinet office, but the £42 million that everyone talks about, the Climate Fund, we don't seem to see much of it being spent. I mean, is this virtue signalling? Because £42 million, we could buy everyone on the island a ground source heat pump then and sort out 34% of our carbon footprint, which is our energy provision. Why are we not spending money on government buildings with solar panels on the roof? Why is that money sitting there and we've had no announcements of action?
Well, I think it would be really important that money and any other money to do with climate change needs to be spent in the right way. And I think that, to be absolutely honest, the plans that have emerged so far have needed further refinement, and that's why they'll be coming forward, in the next few months, in order for it to be clear on, you know, how that money should be spent. I think it would be wrong that if it was just spent on something just to look like, you know, the issues.
But why? I mean, it was acknowledged by Tynwald that it's a climate emergency. Why is government so bureaucratically slow at doing anything? Because you have the largest resources of anything on the Isle of Man. Forget private industry. And yet, as you say there, we're talking about it. We're coming up with proposals and bureaucracy, which is fine within the Tynwald bubble. The people in the outside world are going, I want to put solar panels on my roof. Why is planning so restrictive? Why is planning stopping me doing this? Where's the grants to help me do this, because it's a cost of living crisis? I can't afford to do it.
Yeah.
Where's the action?
Well, to do with the grants, there was... various grants that had been put forward by the previous administration that are now being reviewed, you know, including the Green Living Grant. I'm aware that there has been issues with that. There's definitely things in terms of planning that can, you know, be done and that will be able to be done to do with, you know, making certain aspects of adapting houses like that, you know, to be able to go forward effectively as part of you know, a permitted development rather than something that has to go through a long drawn out process. But to, you know, to get to the point about, you know, where is the action? There are major things that government has to address. Big questions. Big things that the public need to know about how we're going to deal with energy, how we're going to deal with insulation, where funding will be applied. Those are the key questions that government needs to answer, and much better that those things come forward with some specifics around so that it can be understood, you know, rather than just put something out there to start with. I think the other thing is that effectively these matters have really been left for this administration, and, you know, so therefore you will have ministers taking a look to see about how things are working. Is it the right format? Is it developing the right plans and the policies? And that's the sort of critical challenge that's been going on. And I think that's really important and right. Previous to this, we've had, you know, declarations of emergency, climate change legislation, that sort of stuff in itself does not necessarily mean action. So yeah, now this council of ministers is having to look at specifics and challenge perhaps on some of the other areas that have been previously put forward.
So we're going to see action
need to, yeah. And that's why I think, you know, Mrs. Barber was indicating something, you know, what we need to get to is key specific changes that will make a significant difference to how this island can be adapted for the future. I think we will hear those and see more of that from July Timbald.
And we're going to hear, as David pointed out there, it's not going to be dictatorial from the top, the government saying you will do this. It's more of a case of actually bringing the public with us, because we've had people on the Man in Line before saying that we need to do this. We need to do this for the environment. We need to do this. I don't think people, the majority of people, disagree that they want to improve the environment, cut down pollution and live more greener lives. But it's the fact that day to day they cannot afford it. And when government turns around and says, you're not having your oil boiler anymore, for example, and you turn around and go, where am I getting the money? Where am I going to actually change my lifestyle when I can't feed my kids this evening?
Absolutely. These are the sorts of things that need to be considered. And I don't think it's helpful to have a sort of dictatorial approach. But I think that there are distinctions in this. You know, if government were to, you know, legislate, effectively that's already happened, but with a date in the future about fossil fuel boilers in new developments, that's not stopping or changing anything for somebody with what they have in their house now, current developments and current premises. So there is that balance between, you know, what can be achieved now with the housing stock now, and also, you know, what you're base, you know, whether you're storing up problems in the future with anything new that you're doing. But, you know, I completely agree, you can't just have an approach which it is not going to fit for the general public.
So we're going to have consultation, as David suggests.
There has been loads of consultation on all of these different elements. I partly wonder whether people are saying, come on now, let's get on with some specifics that we can get to and understand, rather than a cycle consultation, which is effectively, you know, has happened. So I know that some people would say, yep, we want more consultation. Other people say, look, you've asked us, please now get on and announce, you know, what the specifics are.
OK, we've got a phone message that's been left regarding your role as a constituency MHK. Before we get to that, you mentioned consultation there. There was a public consultation, you know, keeping it local here, making Douglas Head a conservation area. It was overwhelmingly in favour of that actually happening, but you dismissed the findings of that consultation and turned it down. Why is that?
I didn't dismiss the findings of it. I know there was a question about that in Timbald, and your part of the answer is that overall, you know, matters to do with conservation areas are overall being looked at. You know, the strategic plan, the major policy document for that is being looked at. And there are other aspects to do with, you know, talking about up here, Douglas Head. There are other frames of reference or other designations, you know, that, you know, were somebody to put forward an application, you know, because this is basically the question about, you know, whether you develop or not in a conservation area and how that happens. You know, that upon like having the, you know, sort of seeing the information from that, you know, I think that there's already sufficient limitations in place in different ways without,
but you know, just to take you up on that
as a one-off area when actually all this stuff does need to be looked at a whole.
To challenge you, that was great civil service speak, but you as the public representative, you are there in charge, you're to tell what your civil servants do. If the public have spoken in a public consultation overwhelmingly in favour of something, whether your civil servants underneath you who might be having a bit of overreach, which is something that's a big problem we know in government, surely you should turn around and go, no, actually, the public effectively have voted and stated that they would like, in this consultation, a conservation area here, or in any other area. Surely it's your role then to carry that out.
I need to check that there isn't, you know, that there aren't other relevant areas that need to be taken account of. So, you know, I do challenge back on answers that are given to me by officers. I don't think in this case it's a matter of overreach, and I think it's a matter of public records, you know, the different views that there are on this. So it's just a case of, you know, when and where do you prioritise a designation or a change? And is there an urgency on that, or are there other aspects that are effectively, you know, protecting this area anyway? So I would obviously have to satisfy myself as minister on that.
As a general sort of feel about the island, because the conservation area here is obviously people wanting to protect what's here. There's a general feeling at the moment that the Isle of Man is shabby. It looks tatty. We know full well that there's been a Charles Gard video. We get a lot of it on the Man in Line about people saying, why is this not being done? Why are our pavements a mess? What's your opinion on that as an MHK, as well as a minister, but also as a person that really, when you drive round, for an affluent nation, we do not look it?
Well, you know, I'd probably get back to my original view, which is that there is a need to get government services back to the basics. And that's the view I had, you know, prior to the election, and that's what I still hold out on. So getting those standards, that delivery at an operational level, you know, whether that's happening from government or local authorities, you know, we have to get back to a point where we can, you know, we can feel proud and not let down by, you know, some of the details. So, you know, I think it is a wake-up call for recognising that these things have to be dealt with, you know, and if they were dealt with in such a great way in the past, you know, 100 or so years ago, then there really should be no reason or excuse to why that can't happen now.
Is this something that's acknowledged at Council of Ministers level? I mean, from the Chief Staff, I mean, you obviously work under the Chief Minister along with the other ministers in there. Is this something that's acknowledged, that we want to actually improve the aesthetics of our island?
It's acknowledged in the island's plan, you know, in an express way. And so that really, you know, what needs to happen is that the functions of government and government delivery need to get, you know, behind that to meet that political aspiration. And also, I think the demand from the public too. So I absolutely believe in that.
Brilliant stuff. There are, of course, the Man in Line answer phone messages, which you can leave a message on asking questions. We've got one such message now.
Could you ask Kate about a replacement for the Corrin Hall? Residents in the west of the island are very worried that there is no provision for them, if needed, in the west. Kate, who is MHK for Peel, appeared to be concerned before the election last year about the situation and had quite a lot to say about it. Can she tell us what she has done about that situation now, as it seems to have gone very quiet? And if she's managed to do nothing, why not?
There's a question for you. Corrin Home in Peel. This is obviously you as a constituency MHK for Peel and Glenfaber. So what was it, a case of before the election just talking the talk and not walking the walk, or has there been progress?
No, not at all. It's absolutely not that. There is clearly a need for residential care provision in the west of the island. There's clearly a need for investment in that. I didn't, you know, sort of catch the lady's name on that message, but, you know, I'm you know, happy to answer and glad for her call. You know, at the moment, the Corrin Home building and site is with the directors and trustees of the Corrin Home charity. So that's the first point of clarification. So it's with them. Mm-hmm. The decision to close the home was with them. There had been various efforts for, intervention and support, not just from government, but also from Tynwald. And it was through advocacy for that and the need to step in. And actually, you know, I had staff calling me and families calling me to try and help with that. That was sort of my, you know, my involvement there. Now, I know that there are discussions between DHSC and the, you know, relevant directors, trustees of Corrin Home. I haven't been privy to those, which is unfortunate. I also think that there is concern in the community, because people would naturally be minded to ask government or me as an MHK as to what is happening with that. The fact is, it is currently with the matter is currently with the charities.
What influence do you have, though? Because obviously, in the run up to the election, people, you know, this was a topic that was discussed by you and other candidates. So people expect that in an election campaign, when you've talked about stuff, they give you their vote. Is that actually when you're in there, you will have influence or power or a way to actually sort the problem out? So what influence do you have in that?
Well, I think if I can say to you that the only reason why there are discussions now still ongoing with the DHSC and the Corin trustees and directors side of things is because of the urgent motion that I put to Tim Walz in the first place that was amended by the then health minister. That's why those discussions are going on now. And the other thing I think that is of public concern is, you know, people want to know kind of what the plans of the charity are. You know, what are their thoughts? You know, what are their plans with the site? You know, that they're, you know, they have charitable objectives that I think the public are interested in. Kind of what, you know, what's happening there. So I don't have direct influence with the people involved with that. I think that over the course of the past year, there's been various efforts to try and collaborate and work together. And you'd hope that those things can come to some fruition. But you know, I can say that, you know, I have also, you know, written to the directors and the trustees to try and establish and say, look, actually, they publicly need to explain how they're fulfilling their charitable objectives, which includes express reference to the provision of residential care in the West. And, you know, I think that we either need to understand where we're going with the Corin home site or not, you know, if that's going to feature in provision. If not, fine. But then we need to look at what is provided for elsewhere. So I think, you know, my role in advocating for this is to keep, you know, sort of an eye on what government overall is doing overall with residential care provision, but also as a constituency MHK, it's right that I ask the questions of those people involved in the charities to get some clarity as to how their responsibilities as charities and their functions are being carried out, you know, in terms of what is happening with that land, with that building, with you know, what the function of the charity is, and, you know, indeed where any, you know, any money would, you know, who would benefit from any money from that.
Okay, we're live with the Cabinet Office Minister, Kate Lord-Brennan, taking your calls on 66 13 at 68. We'll be back in a moment. The Nation Station,
Manx Radio. The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio.
And we're live today with the Cabinet Minister, Kate Lord-Brennan, and also MHK for Peel and Glenfaber. Near a year into your role. I mean, how do you feel it's going so far? What have you achieved on a local level as an MHK?
Well, you know, I really enjoy that aspect of being a constituency MHK. And, you know, whether it is just, you know, trying to sort of help people or advise people on an individual level, you know, that is a great part of the job, or advocating for them and representing, you know, the interest there. Of course, like Peel in particular has got some, you know, major, you know, outstanding infrastructure matters. So, you know, you've just got to keep kind of pushing for the right outcomes and progress on that.
In terms of achievements, though, what do you feel that you're either have achieved in the last, where we are now, about 10 months, or you're looking to achieve in the future? Because obviously there's a lot of change. Peel is one of the areas that has, I know this is Peel and Glenfaber, but Peel especially is one of the areas that's been having massive growth in recent years. What sort of achievements are you looking to achieve as yourself as an MHK in your term?
Well, I think, you know, we need to get the major infrastructure matters dealt with. I think that, you know, I'm interested that in any sort of future, you know, plans for the town, that they meet, you know, the hopes and aspirations of people in terms of, you know, the services they need for their everyday lives, and also in terms of how the place looks. You know, I think that that is reflected in the draft Northwest area plan.
How do you think your constituents are going to receive that? Because it is, area plans are always contentious. I mean, for a start, it looks as if on the area plan that the Ramsey Marina has been given, you know, basically two fingers. No, it's not happening. What's your view on it as an MHK and as someone from out west?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have said about right from the start about the Northwest area plan, and, you know, in fact, you know, this matter's, you know, effectively been delegated to you know, Mrs. Kelsey MLC, but you know, I'd said clearly the public needs a way to engage with this. So, you know, so I said that actually there needs to be a community guide. People need to find a way to engage with and inform the next steps of this plan. You know, so that's something that I'm glad has been seen through, that had come from my request of different parts of the community.
What's your view on planning, though? Because planning, if you speak to people, it seems to be so tied up in knots now, so restrictive. There's so many things you have to go to. You have to check whether there's not a frog living under your pavement and things like this. And it favours the big developers who've got the money to do these thousands of reports. And it ties in knots the person who wants to build a conservatory on their house or maybe build an extension. And then we're looking at this north and west area plan, as it were, that it seems to be tying more red tape and bureaucracy. And you mentioned there 100 years ago, this island, all the beautiful things we've seen on this island were built without all that bureaucracy. The things we value was built without loads of civil servants tying everyone in knots.
I think that's a really, really interesting point. So I'd probably just first of all say that there's a distinction between planning policy and the Northwest Area Plan, which would seek to basically replace a lot of the really old individual local plans that are maybe from the 80s and things like that. Now, the point about, you know, the planning process, the planning application process, that's not something that goes in cabinet office, but you know, I do recognise there are like public concerns about how that process happens, and there's a need to improve that. And you know, I can tell you that in July, Tim Wald, you know, all being well, there will be proposals that have been brought forward and developed from cabinet office in terms of built environment reform that focus on making the processes around such applications a lot easier. I think people feel like they're passed from pillar to post. There's a lot of the things that you mentioned of, you know, hoops to jump through, and actually, you know, we need to get to the point where process, you know, is not hindering the benefit, but the right things are taken account of in an appropriate way. So I have actually been involved with that, and there will be announcements in July, Tim Wald, on those sorts of things.
We'll go back to the phone lines now. Sharon is on the line. Good afternoon, Sharon. You're live with the minister.
Hi, Pat, how are you? It's now 1:45. And that lady came on the phone and she was asked three questions and she answered them with questions, and I think she hasn't answered one question directly since she's come on your show in regards of public health. And the minister, he's the exact same. His answer to everything is ask Manx Care. Now, she's a minister. She's been paid to do things, not to think. So if you're putting people like that on your show, shouldn't they be coming on with answers and not excuses like we've just had to listen to for the last 45 minutes? Listen to a load of rubbish.
So, Sharon, if I'm giving you the opportunity now, the minister is listening. What's the question you would like her to answer?
The question is there to come on to answer questions that the public put forward, not to think or guess or answer from pieces of paper. That's basically what's going on.
Okay, have you got a specific you'd like her to answer?
Well, my specific basically goes straight to Manx Care and the public health. Larry Hooper is a total disgrace because his answer to everything that's asked of him is ask Manx Care.
I'm happy
and
to answer that's all any
you
specific
get. That's
question
all you get.
Now.
You know, like in fairness, girl, you've been there and you've not answered one question directly. You've either read it from a statement. If I think you're not in the government to think, you're there to do a job and you should be doing it, not thinking about it. And that lady was right by saying when that care home, you were all talk before you got in, now you're in, and you're putting it back to the charities.
No.
You're there to do something about it.
I hope I brought some clarity.
Well, by that lady, you haven't.
Well, I've answered in terms of you know what I've done and what I'm pushing on.
You've done
on
nothing,
and,
love. You've done nothing.
Given some clarification.
You've got into your seat now, and everything you're reading out is. I think it's in discussion, and as the, that boy just said, all that money is there, and nothing's been done with it.
So, Sharon, in terms of you know, there's lots of things there to unwind. In terms of politicians, when we put them in place, obviously they're there to do a job.
Yeah.
When it comes to the specifics, you're saying things like Manx Care has been I'm trying to put words in your mouth here, so
sure.
Either agree or disagree
sure.
with me. Do you feel it's been a delegation? It's almost they've
it's
shifted responsibility to a non-accountable entity.
Oh, of course, he shouldn't be in that job at all. He knows nothing about healthcare. That man was put into a public health department, and we pay him. I asked for a meeting with him, and he refused to see me, Manx Care. as his answer to everything Manx Care. He knows every number going, every number he can tell you, but he knows nothing. He's an accountant by trade.
Okay.
You know, his service he's doing here isn't even his main job. He's got a main job outside working here.
Okay, Sharon. Well, let's follow up on Sharon's points there. Thank you very much, Sharon. And there's obviously there's a massive deal of frustration there with Sharon. In terms of, let's talk communications then, because the one thing we experience here at Manx Radio is something similar, which is that if you want anything about what's happening in health services, which are publicly funded, they should be publicly accountable, go and ask Manx Care. Don't go to the minister. Obviously, the communications team, the government communications team, it's part of the Cabinet Office. It falls under your responsibility. Do you think that the Cabinet Office has a duty to communicate with the media and the public? Because there was an example of a lady who obviously feels she's not been communicated with.
I probably would just come back to Sharon's, you know, point. You know, mm-hmm. I can just say, you know, I'm not sat here reading off a script. I'm absolutely in earnest continuing to, you know, work for the things that I was championing before through my election campaign. And I think that it is, you know, right to bring some clarity on matters. It's easy to say that that is something, you know, that one individual person can solve. It's absolutely not that straightforward with the Corrin home, which is why I've explained why I'm also, you know, questioning, you know, what is happening there. So I would just make that point. I'm not sitting here reading out something that officers have given me. That's not how I handle things. I think that, you know, ministers and politicians absolutely are there to think and challenge and ensure delivery too. As to, you know, the communications function within Cabinet Office, you know, I think that there is a distinction between the communications that Manx Care are putting out versus central government. What I will say though is that, you know, we've been going through this healthcare transformation process. It is incredibly important that that works right. And I get this sense of there being a disconnect between, you know, the public experience and also, you know, what is happening through healthcare delivery.
Who is accountable, though? Because this is the thing, that if there is a problem with the department, if I'm upset about the prom, I'll get on the hobby horse, Chris Thomas will get an ear bashing. That in terms of Manx Care, that we do, the public blatantly do, according to Sharon, it goes to the minister who turns around and says, no, it's Manx Care. And it's a case of, that's public money, that's our money. Who's accountable? Who's the one who answers the questions?
Well, questions about health obviously mm-hmm. do go to the DHSC minister. DHSC policy and strategy is supposed to, sort of healthcare policy and strategy is supposed to sit with DHSC. Delivery of healthcare specific with Manx Care. I'm not going to sort of start answering on behalf of other ministers here, you know, but I just would take the point, you know, we can hear that there's frustrations. Council can hear that there's frustrations. You know, I think it's important that healthcare transformation, anything else that happens to get over this disconnect happens properly. And I will maintain that interest, but I'm not going to sort of, it's really genuinely not my place to comment in terms of, you know, Manx Care. I'm far too set back from that.
In terms, though, let's get back to my question about government communications, because do you believe, obviously, that government has and Cabinet has a responsibility to be transparent? I mean, it was mentioned in the Chief Minister's manifesto 5 times that, because in terms of our experience here, the comms team sits under you, but we've been told repeatedly by a civil servant in your department that we should not put in FOI requests for ministers. Off-island travel costs is an example. Now, surely this is stuff that the communications team in your department should be trying to be as transparent as possible. Is it a case that communications is there almost as a spin department to try and stop bad news getting out?
No, I absolutely don't think that's the case. I think that ministers' off-island travel expenses are actually, they're routinely published. So
only since we've actually started putting in FOI requests, they were being routinely published. But it's one of a million examples. I'm saying that for the amount of money that's spent on communications from government within your department, is the department about trying to engage the public, something David Quirk mentioned, or is it about trying to not let bad news out with examples of, say, the Ransom Tribunal and things like that?
No, that's not something, you know, that is responded to by Cabinet Office Communications, which is effectively there to sort of prepare the news releases as relates mm-hmm. to individual departments' activities. You know, I think things can always always be improved with communications. You know, it is something there that is on my list to look at how that particular element, which is largely operational rather than political. You know, it's not something that has a policy area, you know, particularly attached in that way. It's something that is a government function, but it is on my list to have a look at how things like that might be improved. I think there has already been some changes in that regard.
I mean, in terms of, you mentioned changes there, do we have, because of course, when it comes to the Ranson Tribunal, I know we can't go into details, but the Cabinet Office, like many other areas, didn't come off completely unscathed. Are there now procedures in place to ensure that when it comes to the flow of information and the communications, that it is transparent, it is going to be not challenged if there is truthful fact out there?
I'm not particularly sure what element you're referring to there, but I know that straight away when, you know, Tim Walton government has had to respond to, you know, the findings there, which are very, very concerning. You know, that is why that there is now, you know, an OHR, as Office of Human Resources, review underway. You know, there's the development of a concerns at work service. There's obviously been your major issues drawn out in terms of, you know, public service culture and the need to improve all of that. So those things, they've spotlighted specific areas of concern that straight away there's been a commitment to action on, and I can assure you and the public that those things are already underway. We know that there needs to be better governance in departments, and I think that these things are things that happened in the previous administration. What I would say is that this current Council of Ministers is absolutely taking all of these things very, very seriously, which is why we've seen the reforming announcements that we've seen. And indeed, if there is anything specific that people wish to raise with me, you know, about your concerns about communications, you know, people can let me know that that directly.
Okay, we're live with the Cabinet Office Minister, Kate Lord-Brennan. Any of your calls, 66 13 68. We're live on the Man in Line. A few minutes left to go, and we've got Paul on line one. Paul, you're live with the Minister.
Ah, good afternoon. Just on your £42 million emergency fund for energy. Mm-hmm. People talk about air source heat pumps as though it's all brand new. Government have got an estate of houses up in the north of the island that run on air source heat pumps. Government have also got solar thermal panels on Janet's Corner. They've also built two passive houses at Janet's Corner that don't have any carbon fuel heating. It's all electric, mechanical ventilation with heat recovery and all that good stuff.
We're a bit short of time, Paul. Have you got a question for the Minister out of those examples?
Well, the £42 million. When are they going to start looking at what they've already done and doing it better? And the building side of things, building regulations. Why don't we just say we're going to build all our new houses are going to be passive on the island, whether it's private sector or public sector? There we go, passive houses.
Minister,
Paul, thanks very much. You know, I think, you know, that is a really good point. There are examples out there that are working, and you know, you're talking really about getting down to the practicalities. I think that's exactly what government needs to look at. So those things, you know, are being looked at, and I think that it's matters like that. It's how it's going to sort of affect people in their everyday lives, and also what we're kind of building out in the future. You know, those are the sorts of things that need to be considered in terms of like applying, you know, the levels of funds, the sorts of funding when you talk about that budget there.
And in terms of a time scale then, because I remember we were talking about this earlier when from Paul's point of view, when is it going to happen?
I think that when we've got the next stage of their climate change plans come through, there will be, you know, specifics that will be announced with that sort of thing. You know, Paul's obviously saying, well, why can't you just actually make a decision, say that this is how it's going to be to build for the future? You know, I agree. And there will be your forthcoming announcements. I think July will be a key time for that. So I absolutely take on board Paul's point.
Say that again, Paul.
You've got two biomass plants in Peel, in the school and in Westlands housing. You know, there's about half a dozen biomass plants. Why aren't we putting more in?
Well, I think the Minister's answered that in terms of it, we will see when the plan comes.
Yeah, and you know, this point about how we address our energy needs is obviously it's a fundamental, you know, question that people need clarity about overall on the island and also in the sort of community and local areas, exactly as you've described.
Thanks very much, Paul. I hope that answers some of your question. I'm afraid, Minister, we're out of time. We could have chatted all afternoon, I think, about the things that fall into your brief, everything from public health. We didn't touch on the census. We hardly touched on the Ireland plan. But I do hope you'll come back and see us again at some point in the future.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Manx Radio's Man in Line with the Cabinet Minister, Kate Lord-Brennan. This will be available as a podcast afterwards. And there is a video that has been streamed on Facebook and YouTube. Thank you very much for all your contributions. Sorry to the people we didn't manage to get to. And Man in Line back tomorrow. Who will it be? Who knows? Christy is up next. Thank you very much to producer Howard Kane. I've been Alex Brindley. Have a lovely Wednesday afternoon, won't you? Take care. Ta-da.